Evening, guys, welcome to the Football Fans Podcast. Myself, Jordan, I'm joined this week on the pod by United fan Marvin, Chelsea's Gabriel, and Arsenal fan Basil. We didn't do a show last week, guys, because I was literally setting up to do the recording at about 4:30, and then I got a call from my editor saying that unfortunately Diego Maradona had passed away. Could I come into the office and do a turnaround for the news that night? And of course, I thought it was the right thing to do. So unfortunately, we didn't get to do a podcast last week, and I've just been snowed since. So that's not why we're doing a podcast now. But anyway, no rules. We do what we want. So we're going to try and catch up on so many things that have been happening over the last week alone, including fans being let back into grounds. It's only right we address Arsenal, because if I don't address Arsenal, we're not doing very well. Certain people will just accuse me of being biased and avoiding the situation, so I'll take it on. I've even got an Arsenal fan on this week who actually is not pro Arteta, just to make it look like I'm not agenda driven at all as well. And we'll also we'll discuss a few other things as well that we'll get to the back end of the pod. But let's kick off just briefly. I know it happened last week, as I mentioned, guys. I wanted to do a pod just dedicated to Diego Maradona, but I didn't get the chance to. But I still wanted to kind of give everyone their brief responses to his passing. I'll just briefly kick off. Very, very sad, obviously. Best player I've seen, obviously not live, but seen play the game, was for me than just a world-class talent. This was someone that was an artist, and I know that a lot of people that don't like football don't get why you would use the word artist and footballer in the same sentence. But this guy was one of the three people I think in our game I think that applies to. Very sad, huge figure, only 60, and we saw the impact that he made not only in his homeland of Argentina but in Naples and large parts of Italy as well. Let me throw to you first, Basil. What were your thoughts on Maradona? We won't do the whole ranking this week. I think it's a bit crass to do the whole where does he rank in the greatest players of all time. But what were your memories of him?
Undoubtedly, Elasa, one of the greatest players I've ever seen play. Hugely influential. I've seen a lot of clips. I've seen a few live matches of him in the past and watched documentaries before his passing. And he was just absolutely fantastic. And the influence he had on his team, especially the Napoli team winning them the UEFA Cup and the two titles, but more influential for Argentina, especially being 86 World Cup and then leading them to another World Cup final in the 90s. And I think people don't appreciate the fact that it was a much rougher atmosphere in football at that time in terms of the amount of times he was kicked off the ball, but would just get back up and still have the still to still want the ball, to still dribble past players, to still create opportunities for others. I mean, he was just absolutely sensational and the embodiment of what you want in a footballer. I think he's one of those last dying, he's one of those mavericks which we're seeing sort of dying out in our game, where you give players like that the freedom to just go out there and create the magic on the pitch rather than giving people specific roles to do on the field. Mm. And, you know, just that creativity and freedom he had just allowed people to just enjoy his football.
No, yeah, I echo that as well. Marvin?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything that the gent said. I mean, I'm with G actually. And it's weird because the World Cup 94 was probably my first memorable tournament where I was of an age where I was really into it. Like, I was around for 1990, but Italia 90, but for the 94 one, I was of age where I was really interested. And I just remember that goal, and he just the passion and the spit hit the camera. Like, the guy was, you know, he was widely revered as one of the best to ever do it, right? And I think what's interesting for me, you know, just being sort of born and bred in England, all they talked about for a large period of time was the hand of God. But what they never talked about was that the other goal he scored, which was arguably one of the best I've seen in a sort of in a major tournament. And I think he embodies, to Basil's point, he embodies what the game's missing nowadays. It's missing that passion. It's missing that skill. It's missing that unpredictability that he brought to it. I think there are still a few, like, you know, people will always bring up Messi, etc. But it's a loss for the footballing world. But I think he will go down as one of the greatest to ever do it. And I think that's an important legacy that he should command.
One of the things, Gabriel, that I think does for me, separates him from everybody else is not only was he just a great talent, but he took two teams that weren't favored in their competitions to glory. So yeah, as the guys have mentioned, Napoli and Argentina to go. And one thing I miss about something what he did was at that point, he was the best player in the world. He could have gone to pretty much any team in the world that he wanted to go to after leaving Barcelona, yeah, where it didn't quite work out for him. But he chose to go to Napoli because he wanted the challenge of trying to make a team great. And I think the Leicester story, them in the Premier League, is the last time I can think of something of that kind of scale happening. He did it twice with them, and then he did it the year later, winning the World Cup pretty much single-handedly with Argentina. And the reason why I think that's quite, it's sad that no one does that anymore, because everyone wants to win, and I get that, but everyone wants to go now to the team that is the best team with the most amount of money to fill their trophy cabinet. But for him, and I think Bielsa's got a little bit of this as well, and I think Pochettino as well, I think for people like them, it's not just about winning. It's about the impact you have. It's about how you win. It's about the challenge of, can you win the way that your values allow you to? And I respect that. I definitely respect that. And I like the fact that, and it's a shame that no one, you'll never see the best player in the world going to Stoke or going to, you know what I mean? Going to Verona or
Arsenal.
Wow.
I mean, fair, I'll set you
up there. I'll set you up there. All right. But I loved it. The thing I loved about him as a footballer the most was that for him, it was the artistry, it was the beauty of the game that was on parallel with the winning the trophies as well.
Yeah, definitely. And it's probably because when people compare him and Messi, and now obviously Messi's our generation, he was a little before, people will say, well, the consistency of Messi and the fact that he did it for a year, and that maybe Messi has it above him. But I almost felt like, and listening back to his story and remembering the days in his later his career, if he wasn't fully engaged with it, he wouldn't play. So if he took time out, or if he had a scandal when he wasn't in it, it was because it felt like he didn't have the love. But when he did have the love, and when he was excited by the project, he always gave it his all, and he was always one of the best players on the pitch. So it definitely is sad to see that we won't get people like that anymore. I think that their game's changed, the world has changed. You won't get people who kind of pay purely for the enjoyment or the art. If you do get people like that, there'll be someone behind them who's in for the money, who will try to kind of maneuver it. So it is really sad. I also like he's just his energy. Do you remember when he was like the manager for Argentina in the World Cup? Like, I'm sure he had no coaching credentials whatsoever. but he just stood on the sideline. He kicked every... It's the same, some people kick every ball ahead of people. He was going mad. And it was like, oh, you could see him. I remember... And actually, this has probably been my only beef that I ever had with him. Like, when Nigeria played Argentina in the last World Cup, and when Argentina got the winner with that last-minute goal, he, like, you would think he was like a 21-year-old fan on the terrace. He went mad. He even started goading the aunties who were below him. He was hugging 5 minutes before. It's crazy, but yeah, no, I love him. Massive character, and it's a real shame he's not going to be in football anymore, or just around in general. Rest in peace.
Two things. I will find it, just wrap this bit by saying, I think it's important when people die that we remember their whole... I know I must do this because it's not seen in good taste, but I think when people do die, it's important that we reflect on their whole life and not just reflect on the good parts of who they were and what they did. And there was a negative side to Diego Maradona. He was a womanizer. He did cheat regular.
Yeah,
we know
negative,
about them.
Negative.
Well, it's not illegal, but it's not a positive.
It's not for me, obviously.
disclaimer there, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
It's not illegal, but it's not particularly moral either. And we all know about the drug addictions that he did have. And I've checked my lawyer. I can say that on the podcast because it's well known. But I think it's important we kind of remember the good and the bad. And also as well, I think the best quote, I finished, but the best quote I heard from Maradona, before I get to the quote, if you haven't seen the documentary, there's two documentaries done on Diego Maradona. I implore everybody, especially if you're a football fan, but even if you're not a football fan, to go and check it out, because it's his life. I can't think of many people. Maybe Michael Jackson,
Yeah, no, you're right.
Muhammad Ali.
Yeah, Michael Jackson is probably the closest you have
in terms of the life, body of personal. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not just about football. And the quote, I heard so many great quotes because I was doing some reports on this for work. But the best quote I heard was in Argentina. They said that God apparently said to Maradona, "Oh no. The hand of God. No. That's yours, bruv. Don't try it. That was you. That was all you be. But can I have my left foot back?" And I just thought that was such a sick quote because it just really epitomized the genius and the talent that he really, really had. So, yeah, indeed. Rest in peace, Diego Maradona. Huge loss to football and to the world. Let's now move on to, let's kick off with Arsenal, because if we don't talk Arsenal, I'm going to just get heat for leaving it to the end and doing 2 minutes on it. So, Arsenal, it's not going very well. Mikel Arteta is under a bit of pressure. This weekend.
We just talked about a legend. And
what a downer, that's what I'm saying.
And then you go and do that. I mean, what's wrong with you?
Okay, like Tekka's being...
My main problem with Arsenal fans is totally just ridiculous people.
Big game this weekend, North London Derby at Tottenham. Arsenal and Arteta, not in my view, but amongst many, is under huge pressure. Basil, you're an Arsenal fan, and you've never been quite convinced that Arteta was the guy that should have got the job, and you're even less convinced that he's the guy to continue this job. Arsenal lose this game on the weekend.
Yeah.
What do you foresee happening?
Nothing. Unfortunately, the issue is the people upstairs. They haven't got a clue what they're doing upstairs. Even if we go on a run of games where we're losing, they don't have a strategy going forward. So ultimately, they're going to stick with Arteta for the foreseeable future, because if they get rid of him, they're not well equipped to identify the right person to bring into the club and to support that manager going forward. I think Arteta is safe for the rest of the season, regardless of where Arsenal finish, as long as they're not relegated. I think he is safe for the season. I think if they lose against Tottenham, I think there'll be a turning of the tide in regards to the fans. I think the fans are a bit patient. Some are turning already. But I think if they lose against Tottenham, I think it could be anarchy in regards to the fan reaction.
G, you're not someone that has been convinced about him as well. What in your view has gone wrong, or is it just as simple as he's just not good enough?
Well, I honestly don't think there has been a significant change in his performance. I think he had a good cup run, which masked some really average performances last year. And fair enough, he was getting a little leeway because he was new into the job. And as people keep on saying, you know, the bar could have been much lower. I don't know whether that's true or not, but that's the argument people make. But what you've seen is just, you know, pretty consistent mediocre performances in the league, and every now and again a performance against a big team which makes it forget. I mean, people have, you know, tell you about Arteta's running stats, or, you know, will tell you that, you know, he's organized the team really well, but I'm looking at them and they're losing in the game and they're not having a shot on target in the whole half. Like, I don't see the progress. He's just turned them into a really defensive counter-attacking team, which doesn't really have the answers when it needs to kind of actually play. I look at, you know, there was this whole big thing about signing Aubameyang and, you know, getting Willian in, and I still look at the attack as disjointed. You've still got Xhaka in the midfield, which is a big worry. And maybe these aren't all problems that he's created, but he definitely hasn't solved as many problems as people have made out like he has. With that said, I'm not saying that he should be sacked or anything like that. I just think people need to calm down with the Artekas and, you know, all this type of stuff.
I mean, you're saying people, but you mean me, right?
Yeah, you. And the comments like, well, you know, I think Arteta can do it because I'm not sure about Ole or Lampard.
Well, Gabriel, and
Arteta is probably just as bad.
Gabriel, let me bring you another quote from a reputable source that you know, he's going to be the best young manager in Europe. You can take a guess as to who said that.
Someone on drugs.
No, come on, baby, be fair, give the full quote. I said he can be the best young manager in Europe if he's backed. I said, if he's backed, if the board do their job and back him, we potentially have the best young manager in Europe. But yeah, I did say that. Go on, go on.
Wow. Where did you say that? I hope that was just between you and Basil. It wasn't back up.
Serious podcast. Anyway, Marvin, how bad can you see this getting? Or do you see enough to think that it's worth sticking with him because he could still turn this around being, you know, improve on last year's performance?
Well, it's funny, right? Because you guys are talking about the weekend's game. I think you lose that game. I don't see any chance of Arsenal winning that game whatsoever. I think Tottenham are playing good football. Jose's got them where he wants them. So I wouldn't put too much on that game because I think even if Arsenal are playing well, I think Spurs are just better than them right now. But if I was to Basil's point, I mean, you wanted it. You flirted with him first time, then you went Emery because Emery's got that sort of that history, right? And he's been a manager. He's managed a couple of big clubs already. You've gone for him now, and I don't see many people flocking to manage Arsenal Football Club right now. So I think you stay with him, right? And because everyone's slating him, the positives that I will say is, you aren't getting steamrolled like you used to, right? You're not seeing cricket scores against the big clubs. So that's the one positive. I mean, you're still dropping points. And I think, to be honest with you, the most embarrassing bit of my season as a Man United fan was losing to you guys. Like, I look back at that game and think, we did play well, but Arsenal are like, everyone's running through you right now. We still couldn't do it, right? So that's embarrassing from my perspective. But I think you stick with him. I am a bit nervous about what he's saying he needs because, you know, to get 5 or 6 bodies is one of the quotes I saw that he needs. It suggests to me, A, I don't think that's a great message to the players that you do have, right? If you basically are saying you need another half a team. And B, you know, you've had a couple of windows now, right? And you signed Willian, you signed Gabriel, who I think is really decent, actually.
I mean one window, to be fair. You can't class the January window. He came in end of December. He came in end of December. Come on.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, Jordan, isn't it Edu that's pulling the strings there, right? So there must have been a plan. All he's got to do is rubber stamp it. It's not like they're going to say, we're going to miss this window because you've just come through the door.
Well, yeah, they might have. Edu might have had targets for January based off of Emery being in charge. If Arteta comes in and says, I don't want him and him and him.
Well, listen, Jordan, people have told me that this guy has football diagrams all over his wall, tactics. He lives and breathes the game. Are you telling me he hasn't been watching Arsenal thinking, if I can get 1 or 2 in January, this is what I'd want? You're telling me there was no consideration there?
I don't personally think they would have brought anybody in, even if Emery was still in charge in January.
The board ain't on it. Is that what you're saying?
Partially that, but I think they were gearing up for the summer. But anyway, that's by the by. But I was just saying.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, I would stick with him because I think he's got a lot of work to do, right? And I think, you know, in the spirit of the fact that it's a bizarre season, it's bizarre stuff happening, I would give him until the end. I agree with G, the FA Cup was a complete mask. And I think Arsenal fans who counted the Charity Shield as a cup need to take a long, hard look in the mirror.
I agree.
So I think, you know, and I think people lauded him. Oh, they beat Liverpool in the Charity Shield. Like, you know, that should buy him 2 seasons. Like, it's a plate. Let's get over that, right? So, I mean, we're now in that dangerous territory, Jordan, a bit like you are with Ole, where I'm kind of thinking, keep him in because this guy ain't about it, right? And when I'm saying keep him in because he's not about it, that means you really need to get rid, right? I think, you know, let's see where he is at the end of the season. It's a topsy-turvy season. You know, City, United, a lot of them aren't performing at the expectation that I think the fans would want. So I'll see it. I mean, my main issue isn't with Arteta. I think he's actually a good coach, but I really hope this is a rude awakening, Basil, excluding you, for the Arsenal fans. And I said it the last time I said it, I was on the pod, Jude, that you guys beat Fulham and you got really gassed, didn't you? You got really, really happy. You started talking to me like Willian was a player reborn. You celebrated the Aubameyang signing like it was a new signature. I don't want to cast aspersions, but I'm also not someone that operates in the grey. So you personally said you get partying and Champions League is there for the taking.
Oh, another quote.
We're really doing all that now.
We're a quarter of the way through the season. And let's be clear, I think Arsenal will stay up. I know Roy Keane
is dubious
about it. But I don't think Champions League is anywhere near a guarantee right now based on what I'm seeing. Partey, I don't think, has made a massive impact. People kept telling boss Pogba. Who doesn't boss Pogba at the moment? So there's a lot to happen, Jude. But if I was you guys, I'd stick with him, give him the support. Let's see if the board back him in January and let's see where we are. But one of the things that I think he's got to be really, really crucial is something needs to happen with Aubameyang, right? I can't believe the drop-off. I had him in my fantasy team. I basically built my team around him. And I think he's only scored that one penalty, maybe one more from...
First game of the season, Fulham.
Yeah. And, I mean, come on. Do you know what I mean? That's shocking.
What I will say in defence, and I want to be very clear...
Defence of who, yourself or Arteta?
That's what I'm saying. What I'll say is this. I need to be very clear. People say, oh, Arteta's your boyfriend, you love him. I'm on Twitter, and I'm at Channel 4 and I'm on these podcasts bigging up Arteta. Listen, Arteta's not my dad. He's not my friend. He's not my cousin. He's not my brother. I have no investment in any of these managers at Arsenal. I have an investment in the position. If Arteta proves to me that he's not good enough for this job and he shows me he's not the guy for the job, I will be the first person at the front of the queue saying, sack Arteta. I have no compunction about making the point. If I feel he's not good enough for the job, sack his ass. I don't care about Arteta. However, I think the problem with Arsenal fans, and I get why non-Arsenal fans don't get this, but Arsenal fans should get this. I think Arsenal fans are really forgetting and really underestimating how low we sunk under Wenger and the job. And now people don't want to hear this, but the job of un-Wengerizing this club is going to take... You can't do 15 years of being a loser and expect it to be undone in 18 months. So it's going to take time. At United, their big issue, I think, for me, is better personnel is needed and a plan. At Arsenal, it's more than that. It's better personnel, but it's also a changing culture. Give the man time to undo what Wenger brought us down to, and even Emery kind of rubber stamped. Sunday's a big game for Arsenal in the sense that the rot needs to stop. We have not been good, Basil. We have not been good. I'm not going to defend Arteta blindly. We have been poor. The defeat against Wolves was unacceptable. But what I'm saying is that it may well get worse before it gets better. The Aubameyang drop-off is shocking. I don't know what's happened there. Partey's out now till the new year, I'm hearing, apparently. That's a big blow. We've still got some whack players. So what I'm saying to Arsenal fans is don't be reactionary. Give the guy time. Ride it. We will lose more games this season. We will lose some games we probably even shouldn't lose. But I'm prepared to ride that for the greater good. But if it gets to a point where we're in February, March, and we're still 14th, then yeah, there's got to be a boardroom meeting. I personally disagree with all of you guys. I think if Arsenal lose badly on Sunday, I think there'll be a meeting amongst the board members on Monday morning. I'm not saying they'll sack him, but I think if it's a 4-5-0, I think the board have a meeting first thing Monday morning at the bare minimum to start discussing who could be the next guy. That's what I think.
George, come on.
I don't think they should, but I think if it's a bad loss on Sunday, I think the board start looking, he's a dead man walking and he has to then win his next five games in a row.
Let me tell you, I've got no doubt, and you can quote me on this, right? I've got no doubt that you lose that game. No doubt. Zero doubt.
Yeah, but there's losing and then there's losing. If they lose 1-0, that's different to losing 5-0.
4 or 5-0, the board ain't meeting about nothing. Let me tell you, you have, and it's weird, Jude, because regardless of all the things that I disagree with you on, the one thing that I think we can agree on is your board are toothless. They have no direction. You've got the highest, I think you've got the highest ticket prices in Europe.
World.
Money does not get reinvested. These are not people that care about the lifeblood of Arsenal, who visited Highbury back in the days when you had the club. This is people that are in the club as a company, right? And at the moment, they've stacked their chips with Arteta. And I don't think they are the people that are reactionary, not because, you know, they're cool and calm. It's just because I don't think they care that much, right? So I think, regardless of scoreline, it's going to take a lot more for you, got for your leadership to get in a room and start talking about succession. And even if they do talk about succession, I think what they'll find is there ain't a lot of people banging down the door to be.
That's the reason why I think even if we lose 5-0, they won't sack him, because they can't afford Allegri. I'm not sure they're convinced that Poch is the right guy. So where do they go? So I don't think whatever happens.
You see, the thing is, again, George, even the comment you're saying, they can't afford Allegri, I'm not sure Poch is the right guy. I'm not sure those two people want to be at Arsenal.
I think Poch could be the right guy. I'm saying I don't think they think Poch is the right
guy.
I'm
telling you, I don't know if Poch wants to do that job. Yeah. Like, I'm hearing you, but you're not hearing me. Like, I know Poch was pimping himself out on Monday Night Football like they all did. I saw Eddie Howe do it as well, right? I know he's pimping himself out, but there's a line, and I still think he's got a bit of an affinity to the Spurs. To the Spurs faithful. So I don't think he's jumping into the Arsenal bed anytime soon.
Well, he better jump into a bed soon, because right about now, he's getting cold out there. So
winter's come. Yeah. still find a home.
Listen, as long as Ollie's in a job, Poch has a job, a future job. And he knows that. Now, if we sack Ollie and get someone like Allegri, then maybe Poch might move up to the idea. But I think Poch knows. As long as, and I think the whole of world football know, as long as Ole's in a job, providing you've done a bit of business as a manager, there's a shot that there's a right. Really simple as that. And I'm
George,
not.
Why you guys? You can go for Rooney, George. He's available.
Wow.
Stuff him up.
Well, George, JT.
I was going to say, shut up, Basil.
He's actually the favourite for the derby.
I know.
So you might be able to go Rooney.
You're rude.
You think Rooney would go there, G?
Basil, let's just move on. Let's just spend a little bit of time drilling down into what's happening on the pitch. Yeah. What on the pitch is going wrong? Because they're not getting shots off, they're not creating many chances, and I refuse to have the Ozil chat. I'm fed up, and I'm
so much, Jordan.
I'm so bored of this. Oh, bring back Ozil creativity. It's such a myth. So it I'm banning Ozil chat on this podcast, because it's boring.
So Jordan, let me start off with that first.
Go on.
Because the issue is that a lot of Arsenal fans have short memories. These were the same fans that were calling for this guy.
The same fans!
To be out of the squad. And as soon as a manager comes and do it, short memories. Oh, he's the answer. He's never been the answer. Because when he was there, he wasn't performing consistently. And they now have short memories that, oh, we need him back in the team. He's not beyond. Even if he's in the team, he's not producing.
I'll let you finish, Basil, but just I'll interject there. If Arteta brings him back in January, let me be very, very clear. I will be the front of the queue saying Arteta out. First thing he can do. One, because of pride. But two, because that concession of him going back on his word, I think will undermine his all the respect he's built up in that club. I think will be undermined if he goes back on his word. So
but he's trying to be like building like a little fence to say like it's not really his decision. He's kind of floated.
I think he's played it very well personally.
Don't you agree that it wasn't his decision? For me,
I agree it was, but ultimately he's the face of it, and he has ultimately. You know, he sort of put himself out there that I'm to blame. He probably isn't to blame, but he's put himself out there in the firing line.
I think
so because he's done that, he has to hold that decision.
I think it was just cut and dry, right? And actually, I remember watching Monday Night Football yesterday and they were talking and it never dawned on me why they were 12 o'clock kickoffs until they were like, because it's 7 o'clock in Asia, right? And all the men want to do, and all of the English teams want to do is get that Asia money, right? And Arsenal are no different, right? Ozil said some derogatory things about the treatment of Muslims in that region, and I think it's a purely commercial thing where they've been like, we can't have this player in the pitch because it's messing up the Asian pipeline. Like, really simple.
I think it's both.
How you package it, but that's it. I think he probably would still be out in the cold.
Yeah.
If it never happened, because he's not always up for it. We've talked about
him.
Yeah. That. But I think he definitely would have been registered, and I think he definitely would have been on the bench here and there, and maybe come on to change the game in instances where Arteta needed something different. But I think that's a board decision, And if Arteta wants to carry it, then that's on him, right? But I think that's purely a commercial move they made.
Basil, let me go back to you, because I'm interested to hear what your thoughts are in terms of what's going wrong on the pitch. Apart from Gabriel, no one is really playing well at the moment. You know, the football stinks. We look more solid as a unit, but at the cost of going forward and creating chances.
Do you know what, Jordan? The football's actually worse than what it was under Emery. I'll go as far as that. It's actually worse than what I was witnessing under Emery. And I think the reason why Arteta's very stringent, and what I've realised, and this for me comes at the fact that he hasn't done any coaching of any team prior. For me, this I dislike number twos being managers without any coaching experience, or maybe an under 18 or an under 23, because all of your decisions are predicated upon what the first team manager wants. Really and truly, you don't really get the freedom to stamp your ideas onto the team as much as you want. And that's one of the reasons why I didn't want Arteta, because he hasn't had that experience of managing an under 18s or under 23s where he can work on different ideas. At least Pep was managing the B team before we broke into the Barcelona first team. So when I look at what he's trying to do, it's very reminiscent of how Pep plays. I remember Henri said a quote, he mentioned something in a documentary where it was like, when he played under Pep, Pep told him, stay on the left wing. He says, I want you there regardless of whether you get the ball or not. If you move from that position, you're getting substituted. I'm witnessing that Arsenal is very stringent. Players are in the exact roles, exact positions. There's a lack of freedom and a lack of freedom to move from, let's say, wide position to come in. And if, even if they do, they back out in the position that Arteta wants them. I find it very strange, our tactics, because he's trying to create chances from the wide areas where we don't really have an aerial presence in the box. And it's mainly down the left-hand side. I mean, I was watching against Wolves. There was time we could have done maybe a penetrative pass through the middle of the pitch, but it always went out wide. Come to the midfield, go out wide. Go, it will start again at the back and then go out wide. And it seems that is a very, very rigid system. And that I put down to Arteta, which is why I think we're playing as badly as we are. I think he's overcoaching in a way at Arsenal. And I think it's affecting the players. And you can see on the pitch, some of them just don't seem up for it. And I think some of them are over sort of the way he wants to play on that pitch.
I think that rigidness point, G, is a good point, actually. I agree with Basil on that one. I heard an interesting quote from Fabregas, G, a few days ago, where he was talking about modern-day coaches. And he was saying what he's noticing with a lot of modern-day new breed of coaches is that a lot of them tend to be stuck between their philosophy and getting results. And what's happening as a result of it is that they're actually not achieving either. It's like a hybrid of the two, and they're not really getting either. And he thought that that's what was happening with Arteta. He's kind of he's stuck in this weird area of, this is how I want Arsenal to play, but he's also not getting any kind of results at the same time. Do you think that he's gone too far? I think overcoaching is the word. I think there's teams like at United and under Solskjaer for a long time, I think there was undercoaching, I think. No, I'm not even shooting. I think it was the other end of the problem. I think Arteta is the opposite. I think he's got people too drilled and too rigid. Is that what you see when you watch Arsenal play?
Well, yeah, but the thing is you've seen the evidence, because Pep is exactly the same way. It works when you have the tools to make it work. And I don't think Arsenal have the tools to make it work. When you have a midfield which still has Xhaka, sorry to pick on him again, but when you have, he's not fit for purpose. You saw that Arteta, what actually Arteta said in that quote that about needing five or six players was that he actually wants to play a 4-3-3 and that the 4-3-3 would work better. But yeah, you're not going to do that if you haven't got the tools. And I mean, I heard Willian actually come out a few weeks ago and actually said that, I mean, he was very polite about it and PC about it, but basically said he was struggling to adapt to playing in this mode where he has to stay at a certain place regardless of what happens, and he can't kind of move in or move out and find space. It becomes very predictable if you have average players. But it's been proven that it's a system that can work. So I don't say it's a bad thing, but like you said about what Fabregas said about people getting stuck in their philosophies, at what point do you say, okay, I don't have the players to play to this philosophy. Let me be a little more fluid until I get the players I've got. But because you don't actually get the time to kind of build your team over 3 or 4 years. If your team can't deliver on your philosophy, you're going to be sacked eventually. And I think him hanging his hat on it is going to be detrimental to him.
Just finally, Marvin, I one of the reasons why I'm backing Arteta is because I still think he needs to have his team before we can really judge him. He's working with a lot of crap players. Let's look at one of the players that's really off form. Mentioned earlier when Aubameyang signed a contract, and it's like night and day. It's really bad. He's not quite running as fast as he was. He's not pressing as much as he was at the back end of last season. How much responsibility do the players have to take in why Arsenal have been so poor? And in particular, him being the captain. You can't just keep blaming there's no creativity coming my way. Or is it just a bad run? Maybe it's just a bad run the strikers go through.
A bit of a weird one, Jordan, because we're not talking about, like, he was good last year. Like, the season only finished, like, 3-4 months ago, and he was flying, right? I think his goals basically won you the FA Cup, right? And I think what the question you're asking is connected to what Basil was saying about the rigidness, right? I actually think, and it wouldn't surprise me if Arteta gave him a big rousing speech of, we finished, we got through sort of Project Restart, we did really well, we won a trophy, and now we need to get serious about the way we want to stamp our identity on the club, right? As a unit. I think the challenge is the identity that he wants to stamp is not what any of the Arsenal players want, right? And I think the reason why Aubameyang's a bit slower and he's not as sharp and not as potent as he was, because I just think he's not enjoying playing for Arteta. I guarantee that if you got a new manager in now, George, and the famous bounce that we see with new management all the time, I think you'll get it, right? I think it's what you saw with Ole once we sat Jose, right? Like, the players just don't look like they're enjoying playing football. And I think Aubameyang is somebody who, when he's happy, he has that free-flowing, almost doesn't think about it. Like, he sees the net, he's going to hit top bins. And now, because of the overcoaching, they're overthinking. And, you know, also I think it's a disrespect that he's on the... I know he's done it for quite a bit, but that he's out on the in the wide position, and you've got Lacazette, who I would have got rid of maybe a year ago, maybe 2 years ago. Like, I'd have, you know, he's not for Arsenal. Good striker, but not for Arsenal, right? So I just think it's... They're not enjoying playing, and I think that is culminated in Aubameyang. I think he's going to be the lightning rod because of the cash that he signed. And people like me, and I'll be the first one to hold my hands up and say, you know, I've been in situations where I've got paid in a job really well. I could coast it, you know. Like, and you could kind of put it, this is not my current job, I just want to know if any of I'm working really hard and really on for background, right? But what I would say is, when you're so much better than the rest and you think, I could coast here, I can do that. But when in a football term, he's just going to be the lightning rod. And it's sad for me, right? Because I think he deserved to get paid. I think it would have been a travesty if Arsenal let him go. And I think if they did let him go and you were in this position that you're in now, everybody would have been saying it's because you let Aubameyang go, right? But I just think, as long as Arteta's staying to his philosophy, I just can't see a massive improvement. But I also am a great believer in confidence, right, George? So I think if you pull a shock off and beat Spurs and Aubameyang scores a 1-0 scrappy, you could go on a bit of a run. But at the moment, I don't see it.
It'd be very Arsenal to win that game on the weekend, so I'm not ruling it out. But yeah,
that's not... Can I ask you a question?
Go on.
What's your vibe on Maitland-Niles and Saka? Because I've been very critical of Southgate picking them, right, for England, right? Particularly Maitland-Niles, who's not a certified starter, right? Like, I'm not saying they're not good young talent, but I just don't think they're England cap ready, right? What's your view on them as two individuals? Because Saka I like, but he just seems like one of those... He's a bit like... And you're going to slate me here, but he's a bit like...
Don't say Phil Neville.
Well, it's a bit like Daniel James for us, right? Where he's...
Wow. I mean, he's a of good all player, the things you've said to me today, Marvin, that one hurt.
He's not banging in goals, do you know what I mean?
I want your opinion,
and Basil's as well.
So with Maitland-Niles, he's not bothered. He's the issue, Maitland-Niles, right, he's checked out. And what I mean by that, he doesn't have it in him to improve because he's not playing in his favourite position. Now, I'm an advocate of even trying Maitland-Niles in midfield because I think the midfield options we have now aren't currently good enough. So I'm like, why not try something different and give him maybe a run of two or three games to see what he can do there. But Maitland-Niles, he doesn't want to play at fullback, and you can just tell by his attitude that he's not concerned about improving or making it his own. Saka's an interesting player. I think Saka's maturing as a player, but I think he needs to find maybe that one special quality and work on it. At the moment, there isn't like one particular, maybe apart from maybe his crossing, but there isn't that one special skill or thing I can say about Saka. I think he's an all-round good player, maturing, but I think he still needs to improve, and his end product for me needs improvement too. But there isn't that one special attribute I can, you know, that I can pin to Saka at the moment. And I think that's where, you know, I'm a bit on the fence about him still. I think he's a good player, a good prospect, but I don't know what his special attribute is.
Would you pick him for the England squad, Basil?
Saka, I would say Maitland-Niles, I'm a bit surprised. Saka, yes, just because Gareth Southgate's given anybody. You know, he's like a kid at a candy store. Just take what you want. He's giving everyone caps for free.
Wow. I would agree on both those points with Basil. I think Maitland-Niles, I think he has mentally checked out. I think he's been messed around, and I don't think that he feels valued. And I just think he's thinking, you know what? I'm not going to be a worldie, but I'm at Arsenal. So let me just keep my head down and just take this money, take this profile. And when the contract runs down, I'll move on. I think he could have made that right back slot his own if he really wanted to, because we haven't had a good right back since, bloody hell, since Sagna,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Sagna. So he could have made that his own, and I just don't think he wants to do that. So I think he's just drifting and coasting. I think Saka is a top talent. I think he's a top talent. I think the problem with Saka is, though, I fear that he won't realise that talent, Marvin, because he's in a team. We've wasted so many young talents over the last decade because they're in crap teams. And when you're in a crap team, you're being expected to do too much.
That's why Fabregas left.
Well, and he developed a bit more to the point where he could get that move. But
he left because at the end, you saw, I'm playing with useless players. So
I'm dragging a team at 19 years old. Yeah, exactly. So, and I fear the same for Saka as well. And I agree with Basil's point that apart from his crossing and his decision-making for someone quite young is very good as well, but he's not a great finisher. He's not lightning quick. You know, he can beat a man every now and again. Am I surprised in the England squad?
Not just
in the England squad. Jude Bellingham is getting a call up, then you know.
But Basil, he's not just in the England squad. The last three games, Saka
plays,
right? Mm. And if you contextualize that with the fact that Southgate's getting pissed that people are asking him about Jack Grealish, you kind of have to wonder why Southgate hasn't been sacked. But side story, right? But what is he seeing in Saka that warrants a start in every game, but question marks over Jack Grealish? Now, I know
just the versatility.
And I think discipline. Right. I think Southgate's issue with Grealish the most is his positional discipline.
Yeah, agree.
Grealish is at his best when he's allowed to do what the hell he wants. And I don't think Southgate wants that from any of his midfielders.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I'll wrap on Arsenal. For three things that I want from Arteta that I looked from him when he came in: develop our young talent, make us harder to beat, and get the best out of Aubameyang and our record signing Pepe. I think if he does those three things, I'm not expecting him to win the league or even get top four. He'll have to punch above his weight. But just develop, don't waste our young talent, make us harder to beat. And that I know that he didn't sign Pepe, and I'm not a Pepe fan personally, but that's your record signing. You've got to find a way to make it work. Anyway, Marvin, is it right that fans are being allowed from tomorrow, when we're recording this, it's the day before the fans are allowed back in the ground, that fans are allowed back in grounds?
Absolutely not. Under no circumstances should some fans be allowed based on the area that their club is in, right? And I thought about it at first. And I thought it'd be good to get some fans back in because I'm sick of the fake audio when I'm watching, right? But the more I think about it, particularly in the lower leagues, right? And a friend of mine who's a Watford fan, I was talking to him today, and he was talking about the fact that Watford fans are going to be back in, and he's part of the ballot. And they went away to Preston, and Preston are in tier three, so they won't allow fans, right? And for me, I just think, I know we're in uncharted territory and I know people are desperate to get back in the games and get back to normality, but I think there's got to be a level playing field. I don't think clubs who are in and you like the government tiering system, right, is unique to the country. But I don't think that fans should be, well, clubs should be penalised based on where they're situated. I think it's all or nothing for me. So when we're in a position where 2,000 fans can be let back into every stadium, then I'm all for it. But until then, everybody should just stay at home.
Gee, two questions. The counter to Marvin's argument is, you know, was it 4,000 fans is better than none. We've got to start somewhere. Why not? If this goes well in 6 weeks' time, we can maybe get 8,000, 15,000. You've got to start somewhere is the counter argument. And to that, I know that you're a Chelsea going fan. Mm-hmm. Will you be going back if indeed you're lucky enough to get one of those tickets?
So I have put myself in for the ballot for the Leeds game. Knowing my luck, I won't get it because that's how it goes. But I'm not going to do a Jordan sit on the fence, but I do see both sides to the argument. But because if you look at it, what Marv said, it has some truth. Playing behind closed doors used to be a punishment for when you did something wrong, right? So now it's kind of like, you know, you haven't done anything wrong, but you're receiving the punishment. But at the same time, and I think kind of trying to look at the bigger picture, it will allow some clubs who are absolutely struggling to get some gate receipts through the door. And, you know...
Not Premier League.
Not Premier League, no.
I'm talking Premier League. Sorry, I'm talking Premier League.
And, even if what you're saying is true, don't forget, the minute you get fans in, you've got to pay for stewards, you've got to pay for police.
You actually lose money.
I'm not even sure they're breaking even.
Yeah.
On the additional expenditure...
No, because if you were a lower league team who, George, you were talking Premier League, but if you were a lower league team who only could get 2,000 fans anyway, that's not breaking your structure. It's not going to make any money for a club like Chelsea United. It's just symbolic.
Yeah, okay.
But I think for the lower league clubs, it's vital revenue that the government don't want to give to them. So they're going to have to just let the fans in. You know what I mean? And that's the simple basis of it. If the government are going to say no, then they need to bail out football, because ultimately, like, you can go to a cinema and you'll be a lot more congested in the cinema, but you can't go to a football game. So there is that kind of argument about the fans. I get the point. It is hard on the clubs who are in tier three, but I wouldn't say I would want the other clubs who are in tier two to lose on that just on the basis. But I wouldn't mind. If people told me that Chelsea were in tier three, I wouldn't cry my cornflakes over it. You know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't mind. So it's not that big to Premier League clubs, but I think that the lower league, get fans in, to do it.
So as a principle, are you for fans being back in the ground despite the disparity in fairness, or are you like, sod it, I'm going?
I'm for it. But for my personal objective, but more for thinking lower league clubs need the revenue. That's why I'm for it. If it was just the Premier League, I would say no.
I want to be clear. I am not buying what G is saying.
Yeah, I'm not buying it either. Nor am I. Let me tell you,
I don't know what we were talking about in the last pod I was on with G, Jordan, but G doesn't give a shit about the lower clubs. G feels the same way about the lower clubs as he does about the Chelsea youth. He doesn't. Right? So I'm not buying that whatsoever, right? I think G wants to go and see Chelsea, and fair play to him. He's a season ticket holder. If he wants to go to see him, fair enough. But all this lower league crap that he's spouting right now is absolute crap. I'm not
you know what, Marv? You've known me most of my life, but clearly you just don't know me at all.
Listen, but Basil, first of all, do you think that we should be getting fans back in the ground? I think there's a danger that a lot of football fans have become numb to seeing games now without fans. And my concern from the get-go was fans, without even realizing it, would just get used to seeing no fans. And secondly, do you buy the argument that this messes up the integrity of the competition if some grounds can have fans and others can't?
It's a difficult one. And the reason why I say it's a difficult one, I'm sort of for fans going to stadium. Only reason, because I think for sports, it isn't a level playing field for...
Have you got a ticket?
No, I haven't got a ticket. But the reason why I'm saying it is because the government have allowed people to go out and do what they want in terms of going out to restaurants, going out to eat. And I think if you've laid that type of policy where people can do that, why not football, where you can sort of put conditions in place where fans can go and watch the game safely? You know, it's plenty of open space. You can spread people out appropriately. So I think football should have been given, and other sports should have been given the opportunity to do so. I think you've seen in other sports such as tennis, when they did French Open, even though in fairness they did break a few of the rules when you watch some of the matches there. I'm for fans going in, trialing it out. I'm a bit worried just because ultimately they wanted to do it earlier, then they reneged on that decision. But then conditions haven't got any better in terms of the whole infection rate. And all of a sudden we've got this announcement. And I think it goes to what Gabriel was saying, is that the government just don't want to spend money on sports. And so what it is that, okay, because we don't want to spend money, go out and make some money through fans. At least that way it gets people off our back, because they give you the opportunity to make some revenue. Whether they're going to make revenue is a different kind of kettle of fish. And what was your second question again?
Yeah, but do you buy the argument about integrity of the competition being compromised?
I don't know. It's a difficult one. For some people, yes, they'll feel that the integrity is compromised. There's a lot of people who just don't care, because naturally humans are selfish human beings. And ultimately,
Do you think it's fair that some teams, Premier League teams in the north, won't be able to have fans, but some teams in the south, they can have home fans?
I think it is unfair, just because there's a lot of areas in, let's say, tier three, and there's no schedule as to when they're going to come out of tier three. So you may have, let's say it goes on for like 2 months. You may have a period of 2 months where certain teams are benefiting from having fans in a home stadium, making a bit of money, while clubs are still in the same position as they were before they allowed fans in. So I think from that perspective, it is unfair.
I just wonder with the whole unfairness thing, guys, the integrity for the competition, with the competition of all the leagues, went out of the window early in the year anyway. When you brought back football and you allowed football to continue without fans in there, The teams that were playing those games could say, well, that rival relegation team, they got to play that team with fans. We're playing this team without fans. So the integrity for me all year has been gone. So does it really matter if it's unfair? It is unfair, but I guess I'm asking, does it matter if it's unfair? Because it's been unfair for the last 9 months.
No,
I think for this season, you can let the unfairness go.
Yeah,
because you could argue COVID cases has been unfair. There's so many things which have been unfair, and you know, higher levels of injuries has been unfair. You know, there's so many things that you can argue which is unfair.
No, but is that not unfair though? Because injuries can happen. COVID doesn't discriminate against Arsenal versus Burnley. Do you know what I mean?
But you know, the increased level of injuries due to the higher level of matches,
which maybe on a team like
Liverpool, which has got a smaller squad, for instance.
I see.
I mean, for me, Jude, I think part of it is it'll be interesting to look at the numbers, right? Because I think having no fans has worked in the away team's favour, right? The average points of the away team in the Prem with no fans has gone up, right? So what will be really interesting is after we do a few months of fans in some places and not others, I wonder if the home team's average points go up, right? Which would suggest that having those fans back in the stadium is working in that team's favour, right? I'm not against fans, right? I love fans, right? I like going to games, right? I just think this needs to be equal. I just think it needs to be a level playing field. If it's 2,000 at West Ham, then it should be 2,000 at Man City. And if they're being penalised because of the area, then for me, it means the country holistically is not ready and has not got COVID under control in a way where fans should be welcomed back, right? I think there has to be a prioritisation here. And I think, you know, it's a dangerous game because I can't remember what game it was, Jordan. I want to say like Seville Atlanta. They called it like the Corona game, right? Where there was a team that travelled away in the Champions League and basically they were able to track it back to the spreading in Spain from Italy, right? So I think you've got to really put a sort of scientific lens and say, if there are some areas of the country that still aren't ready, maybe holistically from a sporting perspective, the country isn't ready.
I mean, I'm going to the first game tomorrow, Wickham versus Stoke, that's allowing fans back in.
Barnstormer.
And I just don't understand why football seems to think that it's kind of has this, it's bulletproof from the rest of society. I get there's a lot of money, therefore a lot of protection for football and footballers can be applied, but it just seems like football has this kind of arrogance that we're going to Christmas and we're going to a colder period, but football is letting fans back in. And then I hear the counter argument that, oh, mental health, football fans, it's good for their mental health to be let out. And I don't want to make light of mental health because I get that for some people, not us, but for some people, football is their life, right? But I just think, is that a little bit of a get out? Is that a little bit of a, I don't know, man. I don't know if I buy the whole, it's good for people's mentality. I don't know. I just think,
but the thing is, Jordan, it just has to be applied equally. Because if the rest of the country was in lockdown for everything else, then you would say, okay, you know, football shouldn't be a special case. But football is actually being disproportionately punished in terms of not allowing fans coming in. Because if you look at it, like I said, if football, most of the stadiums are open air. They've got ways that they can manage this thing. 2,000 people going to Stamford Bridge is nothing. You know what I mean?
It's like Arsenal on a weekly basis before COVID.
I was just going to say, I mean, I'm part of the people that are like all or nothing as well, like Marvin, because you have 2,000 fans in Stamford Bridge. What kind of atmosphere is that going to generate anyway?
It's going to be nothing, no.
So you're not helping the
team. It's more of an experiment to kind of see how they can kind of build it up. I don't think it's going to. And plus, people are going to be in there with masks and probably told they can't chant or they can't sing.
You can't drink. And
you've got four seats in between you and the next person anyway. So there isn't going to be an atmosphere.
Not at all.
Which actually, coincidentally, that works a treat in the cinema to have some space around. I always like a seat for my snacks. You know what I mean? So I'm actually more interested in going to the cinema now that I know no one's going to be sitting next to me.
Briefly, guys, let me just get your thoughts on the collision on, when was it, Sunday night, David Luiz and Raul Jimenez. Raul Jimenez is recovering well, we're told. And we here at the FFP hope that he makes a full recovery. I don't know about you guys, but I heard the crack on TV.
Yeah, I heard it. One of the worst things I've ever heard.
It was horrible. And there's discussion now around why football is so behind in addressing this issue. And there's talk about the introduction or the need for the introduction of a concussion sub. The counterpoint is that managers will use it. They'll use it as a tactical ploy rather than protecting players. This kind of also blurs into Klopp's rant on the weekend about the need for more subs and scheduling. It's all part of, as he would frame it, the protecting of players. So first of all, on the concussion, just briefly, guys, where start with you, Basil. Where do you stand on football's approach to kind of the reacting to when two players collide heads?
They're so relaxed on it. It's an absolute joke. First and foremost, I thought it was shambolic from Arsenal's point of view to even allow David Luiz to remain on the pitch after that. I think he should have been dragged off immediately. And for me, my biggest worry as I was watching was, how on earth, if he headers a ball, how much more damage will be done to someone like David Luiz? And the fact that it was uncomfortable, even seeing that there was blood even coming through his bandage after that, it was pointless. And they dragged him off at halftime anyway. But I think ultimately, the FA is to blame, because ultimately Arsenal were following protocol as per se, in terms of the assessing him and allowing him to go back onto the pitch. I think in instances like that, the rule should be the player comes off immediately, regardless, goes down to the change room and is assessed there.
So that's what I'm interested in, Gabriel. What is the line in which you determine a guy comes off? So if two guys go to head the ball and clash, and they're both on the floor for like 5 seconds and they both get back up, is that enough to say, no, you went down, you got to go off? Is it 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes? How long do you decide, no, you're we're not assessing you, you're off, you're done?
Well, I guess I'll disagree with you with the whole, we're not assessing you. I think a doctor would need to make an assessment. I don't know. I mean, it sounds quite basic whether they're going to sit there and say, how many fingers am I holding up or something like that. But I think a medical professional needs to make the decision, not the FA and not the teams. And I think a medical professional would need to actually, have the power to overrule the teams. And I think that's where the problem comes in, because you saw what happened with like Jose and Eva and all that type of stuff. And where is the line of too far? But for me, I think with issues such as concussion, which is so serious, let the medical professionals make the decision and everyone else abide to it. And that should be the end of it.
So you're not in favor of, you know, okay, so let's say David Luiz was down for 10 minutes. I think he was down for like 3 or 4 minutes in the end.
Yeah.
Let's say, okay, even five. Let's say he's down on the floor for 5 minutes. He gets up, they do the whole how many fingers. In rugby, they do the, they say 10 words, 10, three times, and the guy has to repeat those words in order. Mm-hmm. At what point, let's say he completes that, does that mean, cool, you got to go get back on?
Again, you're asking me, I'm not a doctor. If a doctor says that's cool, then I'm cool with that. But it should be based on medicine and on science rather than on managers' opinions or whether we're going to win the game. That's so my only thing.
My biggest issue with that is that with concussions is internal. And I think for stuff like that, you need more time to assess that. And I think in football, as you said, because there's so much pressure and you're getting pressure from the manager and the club, I think they're quick to make a decision. Whereas that's why I'm all for taking them off completely and allowing that to be done in the changing rooms, where you have more time with the player to assess it. Because that's it. A doctor cannot fully understand the extent of the injury there on the pitch. Is it, you know, concussions are very difficult thing to really diagnose. I know people have been diagnosed with concussion long after maybe an incident has happened.
That's true.
That's the issue with, which is why I'm all for just get them off the pitch immediately and do your assessments away from the match.
So any clash of heads, Basil, you're saying?
Certain clash of heads you can get away with, like as Jordan said, if you're down for maybe 5 seconds and it's a light clash of heads, you can sort of get away with that. But whereas the impact, I think, is determined on the impact.
All right. So let's say that same clash happens. You hear the cack.
Yeah.
They both go down for 5 seconds. They both get up after 5 seconds.
Yeah.
You heard the clashing of skulls.
Yeah.
But they're both up in 5 seconds.
I would take them off just because of the impact. I mean, when you hear a sound like that, you can tell that the impact is quite heavy. Even though maybe they may not fully react to it straight away, I think when the impact is of that scale, I think you should take them off.
Marvin, you like American rugby, so this is a big thing in that particular sport.
American rugby.
what do you think about football's approach to this? Is it, and why is it dragging its feet in doing what I think we all feel is common sense?
First of all, you know it's American football. Don't be disrespectful, right? Let's just get started, right? For me, I've been listening to the gents speak, and I feel very passionate that football is doing a terrible job. And to Basil's point, and for those of you that don't know, like, go and watch Will Smith's concussion film, or go and do a bit of research into the NFL and the amount of players who have taken their own life in later life, right? Where literally they felt like their brain was trying to exit through their ears, right? And think about the trauma that the after effects of concussion can have on somebody's life and the life of their family and friends, right? So for me, I think football is doing a terrible job. I think football will never get near the NFL, and the NFL went through a lot of defensiveness before it's arrived at this point. And the reason why football will struggle is because of the free-flowing nature of the game, right? NFL is stop-start, timeouts here, all of which gives people time to evaluate, right? But I still think there are some learnings that football can take from the NFL, right? If you look at the NFL actually has spotters in the crowd and along the touchline watching players that have been involved in a high-impact tackle. And they make the decision, and they will watch that player and think that there's something not quite right. And then that player will enter into something which is called the concussion protocol, where they bring up a tent and they evaluate, right? And they evaluate with a neuro trauma surgeon or something. A brain specialist does that evaluation, right? And then a decision is made whether that person is clear to return to play. I personally think, because of the flowing nature, I don't think it can be within the club's hands. I think it's got to be almost like a VAR, Jude. Like, there should be an independent sort of specialist who's monitoring a game and will make a decision based on the challenge, the impact, the collision, whatever, who makes a decision informing a club that a player has to leave the game, right? I just have no idea why they're taking the risk. So when you heard that noise, there is no way on God's green earth that David Luiz should have stayed in that game. You have had, basically had something very hard, i.e. another man's skull, collide with your skull at an alarming impact. It just doesn't make sense. And I actually think the only reason why Arsenal took him off at halftime is because at halftime they probably had a proper look at him and said, there is no way this person can
So Marvin, to your earlier point, two things. To your earlier point about someone in American rugby watching the guys run and do their thing. David Luiz, from the time that he got back up to half time, wasn't demonstrating any behavior of him being concussed. There wasn't wobbly legs. So if you were watching him for the remainder of that half, there's nothing obvious that you would have seen to make you think this guy's got to come off. So that's why I'm not so sure watching someone and saying there's no overt signs this guy's in trouble is valid. And second of all, the idea
of... blood coming from your head is a bit of a sign.
No, it is. But then to counter that, I could have a scratch on my head, wrap it in bandage. Blood could come through that, but that was a scratch. So I think it's either you come off straight away or we let guys play and we're going to be irresponsible. And my second point is the idea about the independent doctor, I think is a bit of a red herring, because I don't, if you're a club doctor of Arsenal and you're assessing David Luiz, I'm sorry, but my license is more important than my job. So the idea that a doctor is going to be biased and have pressure from Arteta to put him back out there because we need Luiz to play, I think is a bit of a weird one. Because if I put David Luiz back on the pitch, okay, at halftime, and then, I don't know, an hour after the game, the following day even, something bad happens to David Luiz, if I'm David Luiz, I'm not suing Arsenal. I'm suing the doctor. So this idea that even if you're part of the club...
You saw the Tottenham document.
Yeah, I was just about to mention that too. Yeah. You saw the pressure Mourinho was
putting on. They were talking about Son, who scored the winner after landing awkwardly on his shoulder, right?
Wasn't it Vertonghen a few years ago?
No. The one on the documentary was Son.
Okay.
Son carried on and then scored. And then when he was evaluated, the medical staff said, it's a pretty serious injury, he shouldn't play. And fair enough, Mourinho sided with the medical staff. But let me tell you, that doctor was under pressure from Jose. Pressure, George. And I tell you, if that's a Harry Kane or if that is a Bruno Fernandes and he's had a head injury.
And it's the 85th minute of a cup final. And yeah.
If it's 70-30 that he should come off, 70 in favour that he should come off, because of the importance of that player, it instantly becomes a 50-50. And I'm telling you, all that license stuff, I'm not sure. I think if you've got a doctor who is that integral, who puts a player's well-being over maybe he's all right, I think you're being naive there. I think they're fans as much as we are. And unless you can prove mad medical negligence and, you know, even MJ's doctor almost got away with it. I still think, by the way, I think there is a pressure element to it. I take
100%.
Your David Luiz, but I also think you and I don't know what to look for. And I've seen it in NFL where I thought that was a bad challenge, but he popped up quite quickly. I'm sure he's okay, and they just put him in the concussion protocol. I think the bottom line with this, Jordan, is David Luiz might be okay, but when it comes to the head, you just can't take these risks, right?
I agree with that. I just think what is the determining factor? Are we doing a blanket rule that anybody that heads the ball, you're off? Is it, do you know what I mean? How long do we wait? I'm trying to work out what determines this guy coming off.
Do you think he'll wear a Scully cap for eternity?
Oh, jeez.
Listen,
respect Big Pete. Still wears a Scully cap in the meetings.
I want to talk more about the scheduling and all that stuff. The club's gone, but we run out of time. But just before we wrap up, guys, I wanted to ask this question. With all that's happening with no fans, okay, they're coming back slow, but no fans in the ground, a lot of the weird results, VAR, handball rules. Is everybody enjoying football right now? and take away whether your team is doing well or doing poorly, is everybody generally enjoying football? Let me start with you, Basil.
Quality of football's gone down, honestly. I mean, it started off brightly, but I'll say over the last maybe 2-3 weeks, you can tell the quality of the football is definitely gone down. And I don't know what's the point. Maybe it is because the games are coming thick and fast, and so players are having to pace themselves. I haven't been impressed. And then VAR is just an absolute stinker because they're not even getting the decisions right. I mean, ultimately, I think Jamie Carragher actually said it best. With the referees, it seems like a mafia where no one can really go against each other in terms of the decisions, because some of the decisions are just ridiculous. And I think what we need to change is they need to come out, even if it's the end of the game, and provide a clear understanding or a clear explanation as to why they've concluded some of the decisions that they have concluded. So at least from an audience perspective, we understand why. I think we're less scratching our heads sometimes with some of the decisions that are made, not understanding why they've come to that conclusion or why they decided not to overrule certain decisions. But like I said, from an entertainment perspective, the Premier League this season, over the last 2-3 weeks, it hasn't been there, if I'm being brutally honest.
Marvin, are you, you know, there's been so much moaning and whining and weird games. And are you, like I say, forget who your club and whether you're doing well or not. Just generally, are you watching Match of the Day and just enjoying the games you're seeing? And I'm not talking so much about style of play, although that comes into it, but just generally, are we seeing more talking points now off the pitch than on the pitch? And is that dampening your enjoyment? Or maybe you're liking the away win?
No, I think I'm kind of where Basil is. I'm not enjoying it, right? And my main beef is just with the decisions that VAR are making, right? It's getting a bit ridiculous now, particularly on offside, where I think you should go with the attacker when it's very, very tight. I just think it's getting too scientific, and that is spoiling the enjoyment. That being said, Jude, I did have a conversation with a friend like this the other day, and I thought, maybe I'm just watching too much football. Because to your point...
That's actually true.
To your point, we used to have, what, 3-4 live games a week? Now we're probably getting closer to, what, 6?
All the games are live.
I'm not actually watching Match of the Day, really, because I'm watching a lot of the games live. And maybe I'd enjoy it more if I watched less and just watched the highlights of the good bits. I'm not diluting it any. I'm basically seeing too much of it to the point where I'm seeing all of the shit all of the time. But I think there are tweaks that football can make. I think VAR needs a hard look, particularly at handball and offside. I don't think it's in, like, some of the fixtures that are live that I'm watching, I'm just watching because they're on. I mean, Villa, West Ham, would anybody like... And I think people are trying to find out, because obviously the Prem tried a ting, didn't they, when they said box office, and that got banned. That got binned real quick because they realised that nobody wants to pay for that shit. They'll watch it if it's on, but paying for it, 15 quid as well. I could watch two old uncles in Tyson and Roy cuddle each other. So I think I'm not... So to ask your question, no, I'm not enjoying it. I think VAR is probably my main issue, but I think I'm probably watching too much of it, and maybe it's always been this shit. We just hit highlights.
You know what? Just to add to what Marvin said, Jordan, quickly, because I realised, and I thought about earlier today, that football is actually on every day. Because let's start from a Monday. You have a Monday, 2 Premier League matches, Champions League, which is now on every week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Europa League, Europa Cup, or Europa League, however you pronounce it, is on Thursday.
Well, no one watches that. But...
exactly. Then you may have a Friday evening game, as we did last Friday, and then Saturday and Sunday. So sometimes you're even getting 7 days a week worth of live football.
Yeah.
Gabriel, just to wrap up, I mean, through the prism of VAR, when you watch a game now, are you watching football games now expecting there to be a controversial penalty given or a controversial handball? And I don't know about you, but when someone crosses the ball, I'm no longer looking at where the ball goes. I'm now, without even realizing it, looking at where the defenders are, what part of his body it hit. If anyone strikes a ball at goal, I'm not thinking what corner is it going in. I'm thinking where is it hit the defender's arm. And that for me is slightly diminishing the overall job. I'm expecting fuckery, basically, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, definitely. There is always going to be some controversy. But I don't like that it's blamed on VAR because then it's attached to the technology and the technology is doing its job. The technology is showing you what's there. Mm. It's just, I think VAR is just highlighting that the how bad the referees are.
Well, when I say VAR, so I mean the whole package of officiating the game. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but it is the officiating. It's just showed how it's supposed to help the referees, but it's just showed how bad they are.
That is shocking. Some of the offside rules we're seeing.
Yeah, I'm not sure I agree with that either.
About millimeters here, Jordan.
Yes, like yesterday's one.
Millimeters, like no sort of 20/20 vision person's going to see it. And that's why you got to err on the side of go with the attacker. Like, fair enough, they might be missing some obvious shit. But to say it's highlighting their shitness when we're watching it about 7 times and we still can't call it, I think is really harsh, G.
Well, the shitness in it is first thing is people don't want to take decisions. So that is a part of it as well. That refs are now waiting for VAR or being cowardly and hiding behind it. And that I don't like at all. The offsides, I don't particularly blame them for because it's the rules are the rules. They should just, for me, they should go back to the rules of the clear daylight. But they don't want to do that. So the referees have to apply it literally as it is. But generally speaking, like, there was a lot of hype about, like, the Danny Welbeck penalty on Saturday. And I didn't understand that. For me, that was a clear penalty. What was the debate?
It wasn't a clear penalty, but it was a penalty.
I think it was clear.
I thought it was clear as day, Jordan.
It's a penalty for me, but it's not clear.
Well, I mean,
do you mean by clear the referee should have seen it in real time?
No, the referee might not have seen it.
But it's not up for debate, really. I don't think it was up for debate because people are making this whole thing about, well, it wasn't a clear and obvious mistake, so it should have been reviewed. I'm like, if a mistake is a mistake, if they've missed the mistake and they've pointed out, that's what the technology is supposed to do. But yeah, I think the mention of VAR, and I know that's not why you was mentioning it, George, but the technology is fine. The referees need to work out what they're doing, and the people who make the laws for the referees need to work out what they're doing, most importantly. I totally agree with the lads on the offsides, but I think they need to be a little bit more... I think they need to take out this clear and obvious error thing, because then you get a stupid debate around that. It doesn't... error is an error. Why does there have to be a benchmark to be, this is a high-level error or a low-level error for people to intervene? If someone's made the mistake, point it out. Isn't that what it's there for? Mm. But yeah, we are arguing over a lot of stuff. And
it's every game. Every game I watch, game. G, now, I'm expecting. It doesn't matter if it's a big team or a small team, if it's Burnley versus Sheffield United or Chelsea versus Spurs. I'm expecting now when I watch a football game, there to be some nonsense decision. And that's distracting for me from watching the game. I don't know if it's just me, if I'm being miserable.
But yeah, you're totally right. And I think with a few tweaks, you could take those contentious things out. There's a few things like you don't have to have a VAR to a level where you're checking the lines of whether it's someone's nose is offside. You don't have to have that. That's decisions that the authorities have decided to make. And then in that sense, you have a little bit of empathy for the referees because that's not their fault. There's no way anyone can see that. And I don't think, would anyone complain? Like, who would complain if you got a goal given again? Well, probably United fans because they used to get in everything their way.
Yeah, yeah, course,
but,
course,
but
yeah.
Apart from that, who would complain if someone was offside by a toenail? No one's going to complain about that. So why do we have that? I think to a certain extent, sometimes we forget why we make rules. Like, offside was to stop goal hanging. It's gone way too far now. You know what I mean? Well,
I'm with you, G. I was never in favour of VAR, and I just think we're in a mess now. And the thing that worries me is that this is going to be how it's going to be for forever now. They're going to scrap it. This is it. We're watching a new sport now. The handball rules, the VAR rules. It's a new sport, and I don't know if I'm enjoying it as much. But anyway, that's just me moaning.
Let's face it, Jude. Some of that is connected to your shitness as well.
It's not, you know, I knew you'd say,
like,
that. George,
I know, obviously, Diego Maradona, rest in peace and that. And I know Ollie would say it if he was here, but it's no coincidence that you were unavailable for a pod last week. and Arsenal been shit. And we did talk about this before, George. So let's just make sure.
G can vouch for me. G can vouch for me. Last week, I was setting up for the pod, and then the news broke at about 5 o'clock, 4:30.
George, I'm not calling you a liar.
Anyway, this is the Football Fans Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us. We are on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify. Leave us a review, leave us a message. Thank you very much, Basil and G. We'll see you next week. Peace.